episode 95 of the Planning Period Podcast. You're at Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Scott Nunes. Scott is an English teacher, site leader, district technology leader, and host of the TNT EdTech Podcast. I met Scott at ISTE this year and heard him on John Spike's Laugh Ed podcast, and I knew I wanted to talk to him for the show. Scott and I talk about podcasting, ISTE and our takeaways from the conference, the lack of working together between groups in education, what we can do to help people work together, the need for teachers to use more EdTech in the classroom, and how teachers are who reach all their students are the ones who are remembered. So, sit back and enjoy episode 95 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Scott Nunes. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I am your host, as always, Brad Treffler, and I am joined today by a fellow podcaster, a fellow coach, a fellow teacher, Mr. Scott Nunes. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, Brad?
I'm doing good. You know, we were talking before I hit record, and we were having a good jive, and I was like, you know what? No, we're gonna hit record, and we're just gonna flow. So I just want to pick it up. You know, we were talking right away about podcasting and just, you know, what this podcasting life is like, and I thought this needs to be recorded.
Yeah, it's definitely part of our lives. As I was sharing with you, it's like never ending. You know, there's always an idea or a way to promo or a way to, I don't know, just kind of get the word out there. And it's so much more than a hobby, we were saying. It's so involved.
Yeah. I was saying that in general, I'm just not good at hobbies. To me, a hobby is one of those things that you can pause and put aside and then come back to later and be like, you know, oh, I just need a break from whatever it is I'm dedicated to. And I mostly am just like, I feel like I go all in on most things. Just in terms of effort and thought, like I just am fully involved and things will get stuck in my head. So you, like you said, the podcast, there's always, okay, running to-do list. I need to promo this episode. I need to contact this person to be a guest. I need to follow up because they haven't replied yet and scheduled a time. I need to, you know, it's that constant like work.
Right. And I don't know if you're like me, I've been trying to get as many people on during the summer as I can to kind of front load a little bit. For just in case, you know, something goes wrong, you know, mid-year or something, you know, that way I'm ahead and it's not like week to week I'm doing these episodes.
That has been my process typically. I have found this to be a very weird summer for me, mainly because my wife and I, we got married in December, but we pushed our honeymoon till the summer started because I already had to take time off for the wedding. And I was like, look, I can't take another 2 weeks in December right before holiday break. That just isn't a thing you can do as a teacher. That's not an option.
Right.
And so we did the wedding in December and then pushed our real honeymoon till, you know, this summer. And so I got out of school, kids got out of school. We had 2 days of post planning. And that Saturday I jumped on a flight and was in California for 2 weeks. And then got back. I was home for a week, had class for my master's program in between, and had to get a bunch of work done for that for the week I was here, and, you know, and spend time with my son and that kind of stuff. And then my son went back to his mom's, and I jumped on a plane and went to ISTE. And I, you know, and then I got back, and I felt like, I don't know about you from ISTE this year, but I felt like ISTE was such a whirlwind. It took me probably 2 weeks to get back to the right headspace to believe in, like, actually doing anything.
Yeah, ISTE, you know, when people ask me, oh, what's it like? It is like organized chaos. It is so crazy, but yet it's a very well-tuned running machine. Like things are like clockwork over at ISTE, but yet with 23,000 people in one gigantic building that spans a few blocks, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's nonstop, man. I think while ISTE is organized chaos, my time is mostly just chaos, it feels like. I feel like, okay, I've got seven places I could be right now. Which one do I want to do? And much of it is like an internal coin flip. It's just, well, this is the closest room of the five I want to go to. So I'm going with that because my feet are tired.
That's kind of funny. I did that one time. I was trying to go to one buddy's session. He was in ballroom one or something, but it was in the Marriott, And I didn't know where that was. And I was looking for it and I was already like running late because I couldn't find it. And I dropped off a friend at a different session and I ended up just going back to where that other friend was. And that session killed. It was called Joy Hacking. I'm mispronouncing it. There's something else in there, but it was with Michael Matera.
That's John Spike session, right? John.
Yeah. Yeah. That was killer.
Yeah, I didn't get to catch that one. I was kind of disappointed, but he was telling me about it afterwards. And I was like, man, that sounds cool. I should have seen that.
No, really cool session. Definitely check out the slide deck for that. Really good stuff. Really good practical things you can do. And of course, those guys are just funny. They have really good interplay. I hope they keep doing sessions together. They're both great on their own, but together they're even better.
Yeah, I got lucky this trip because my hotel was near where John ended up having an Airbnb or wherever he was staying at. And so we hung out most of the nights after, you know, once the conference ended, we were going out in different places with him and some other friends and stuff. So I got to spend a good bit of time with John, and he is just funny. Like every time I'm with him, it's just laughs from start to finish. You know what I mean? There's not a dull moment when you're with John Spike.
No, he's a natural comedian. I was just on the Laugh Ed podcast and oh man, he brought out some good stories. He has a way of doing that. And I think relating it back to podcasting, I think that's what any good host needs to be able to do, is draw out like these real deep angles and aspects of their guests. And those are the ones that really take off and soar high.
Yeah. Well, we dove right into it, but let's, for my audience, and now at the, you know, as a professional podcaster who clearly knows what he's doing, 6 minutes in, give a little introduction to you. for my audience, can you give us a little introduction as to who you are in your space and education?
Yes. So I'm Scott Nunes. I'm a 9th and 10th grade ELA teacher out of Modesto, California, and I love ed tech. And I'm also a swim coach, a site leader, district technology leader and consultant, and then have my own podcast, the TNT EdTech podcast, where myself and my buddy Matthew, we talk about EdTech and have on guests and have them share their story.
Nice. Yeah, I have not listened to your podcast. I need to. You know, there's so many in the education space right now. It's hard to keep up, right? You can't possibly catch them all.
Yeah, I think each one too is good in its own right. And I don't say that lightly. Like I was thinking initially like, oh, hey, mine's pretty good. And then I started listening to other ones more often. Like, oh, wow, I like that one. Ooh, I like that one. And I found myself doing that over and over and over again. Very rarely do I say, ooh, I don't know about that one. Most of the time, they're all good. I think because we're educators and we want what's best for our students, and we kind of have, you know, high expectations of ourselves and our students. So, you know, of course, it's going to be good.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's kind of like, you know, and the thing about podcasting is there's an acceptable informality and imperfection to it, right? Like, there's right. When you look at, like, when you think about TV, right? You think of a TV show, even YouTube channels nowadays, there's a polished, finished look that needs to go with those things. And if it's not, it's going to be really hard to overcome that lack of polish, that lack of professionalism. The content would have to be astronomically good to overcome that stuff. But in podcasting, when you get sound flubs and things are a little off, it's kind of like, meh, okay. But the content's still good, so it's all right.
Right. It reminds me a little bit of NPR when they do stuff on location. You get some background noise every now and then, you know, it can be a little muffled, but yet it's still good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Well, we mentioned ISTE a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about that. What were some of your big takeaways from ISTE this year?
Honestly, the biggest takeaways were, the conversation. So this year I scheduled things a little differently. I had my whole list of sessions to go to on a calendar with regular updates, so I wouldn't miss a session. But I decided, hey, if I'm having a really good conversation with somebody, I'm not going to worry about that session because I could race over there. It could be full or, you know, could take away. And so I was more into building relationships this year. And that strategy really paid off for me.
Yeah, I had very much the same sort of mindset. I did not prep at all ahead of time. I didn't look up sessions whatsoever. I didn't pull the list up, nothing. I felt like just I was chaos leading up to the conference. Like I said, being gone for 2 weeks right before it, that didn't help. But, you know, I did not look at a single session in advance. When I got into Philly Saturday morning and I started at lunch, I think me and my friend that I was with that was going to the conference, we started looking through the session, started favoriting some stuff, you know, things I wanted to check out, and woke up on Sunday morning to pull up my list of what did I want to check out. And the app had lost all of my favorites, literally everything. No. I spent probably an hour and a half going through this stuff during lunch and all of it was gone. And I said, okay, well, I guess that's not how I'm running I'm not doing this all over again. So this is just not how my conference is going to go this year. We're going to do something different. So I went through the suggesteds. They did some, not suggesteds, they did by the PLNs, the ESD PLNs. So I went through the Tech Coaches PLN and one of the other PLNs and said, okay, these are the ones I definitely want to check out. And that was it. Then I just kind of free-formed it from there. I just figured out where I wanted to go based on what other people told me. And again, those conversations were everything. You know, I stop and I run into Chris Nessie or I run into Mike Washburn and Glenn Irvin. And, you know, I run into Dan Krynas and talk to him for a while, John Spike and talk to him, you know, so I run into somebody and I'm going to talk to them instead, because that's what I really want to do is talk to people and have those conversations. So, and it was great. I loved it, you know, and like you, my biggest takeaway is those conversations, those relationships and getting to do some of that stuff more than, you know, session information.
No, that's great. That reminds me of tagging along with one of my buddies, Rick Bray. I had never met him in person. He and I are both Schoology ambassadors, and we were both at the Ditch panel with Matt Miller and 10 other esteemed guests. That was a great session. I loved it. One of my favorite ones. And then he suggested I go to this other session with him on AR/VR in the classroom with Jamie Donnelly. And I had kind of forgotten about that. That was one of my like must do things. And it was one of those BYOD EX ones where you needed to have registered ahead of time. And I didn't, but thankfully I got in and that session killed. And then we got lunch together and hung out for a while after. And I had an amazing sandwich. It was called a train wreck. That thing was solid. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. I had some good food there. I will say one of the biggest perks of being in Philly again is that convention center is kitty corner to Reading Terminal Market, which has amazing, like so many amazing food options. So that is nice. The eating there is on point for sure.
That's where I got the train wreck at some Cajun restaurant. I don't remember the name, but it was good.
I almost got breakfast at that Cajun restaurant. They had a gator po' boy for breakfast that I was like, oh, that sounds delicious. But I decided not to. I ended up going somewhere else. I made a mistake.
Hey, and you know, mistakes, sometimes those can lead to our greatest successes, right? We can learn from those.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's okay too.
Nice. Well, I think it was a good year for ISTE. I enjoyed my time. I learned for sure that I would never want to live in a major city like that because grocery shopping is a nightmare. that was the other thing I learned. I wanted a case of water because I knew I was going to need bottles of water to keep myself replenished. So we go to this Target that's, I don't know, two blocks from our hotel. And I've never been so exhausted as I was when I got back to the hotel, having lugged this case of water and this 12 pack of Mountain Dew with me to my hotel room. And like, we didn't even make it all the way to the room. We're like, I just need to sit down. I'm going to sit down in the lobby for a little bit. Just, this is exhausting. How could I couldn't do this. I couldn't live this way. I never realized how important my car was to me. Oh man, that was rough.
Right. I like how you have your priorities straight, your water and then your Mountain Dew.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have to have caffeine. That's critical. You know, priorities. And I honestly only drink the water to be able to justify the caffeine. Like that's because people tell me I'm supposed to have water. So it's okay, right. Well, fine. If I have a Mountain Dew and immediately follow it with a bottle of water, that evens back out, right? That's, isn't that how that works?
Yes, yes. I used to do that. Now I just go straight to the rocket fuel. I go to coffee, and not just coffee, but I do espresso black. So no cream, no sugar, nothing fancy, just dark, dark caffeinated beverage.
Yeah, we have a little espresso maker. My wife uses it way more than I do. The problem is it only makes the one little cup of espresso. And I don't know if you saw it before you jumped on, but I'm on my sixth cup of coffee today. So having made six cups of espresso would have just been frustrating.
Yeah, I kind of cheat. I use what's called an espresso machine. So it's a pod espresso machine. It's not true espresso. So for the aficionados out there, it is not true espresso, but it gives you the same taste. And honestly, it's better than a lot of the stuff I would make at home with my own espresso maker. So making espresso is an art, and I would need to practice a lot to get better at it. So the Nespresso works out for me, and one little shot equals about two cups of coffee, something like that.
Yeah, we have one of those. I like it. It definitely does the job. And so sometimes if I'm feeling very tired, I'll add a shot of that to my coffee. That way I have like a little bit of both, right? And get the best of
both. Oh, there you go. Yeah, you get the boost, but you get the regular coffee taste.
Yeah, yeah. It's a win-win. It's a win-win. Well, Scott, this is great already. I'm just having a good time. I don't know if there's any information that's relevant to any of my audience, but I'm just having a good time chatting. I'm feeling good about this. This is good stuff. All right, let's go to my actual questions for my guests. And I don't know if you listen to the show, but I ask the same three questions of all my guests. And the first question I ask is always, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Ooh, that's a good question. The biggest problem. There are so many. I think the biggest problem is people not working together, like, you know, across job areas. So I see this a lot. So you can have a teacher on fire, but then they're stifled by either like admin or district office, or maybe even state legislature. Not to say, you know, we shouldn't be following rules. Absolutely. I'm definitely a rule follower. If I'm told to do something from higher up, I definitely acquiesce and do it. I really don't fight it. I believe in order and, you know, following hierarchy and whatnot. But at the same time, we need to give room for creativity, or sometimes maybe there's an admin doing things, or, you know, a district person, but then everybody around them is kind of against them. Like, we need to have more free-flowing teamwork. And that's why I love Twitter, because people are making this happen in their districts. And I honestly feel we're at a great time in education. I feel that we're better together, and we're really bonding, and our voices and our kind of our why, like the reason for doing things, are really meshing and melding, even if we're on different ends of the political spectrum and we're working for a better tomorrow. And that's what most teachers want. And I think it's just a matter of time. I think if we're patient, that's going to happen. The changes we want to see, we just have to keep pushing. And I think that's the big takeaway. Just keep pushing. You know, don't give up. Don't lose sight. You know, take a rest if you need to, if you're feeling kind of tired from pushing and battling. But ultimately, just keep going forward, and you're going to make a difference.
There does kind of seem to be, you know, we were talking a little bit about how, you know, podcasting is just, there's so many great ones out there, and it's because everyone is in this for the right reasons, more or less. They're, you know, they're all trying to just better students. And in my experience, even, you know, bad administrators, even administrators who are quote unquote bad, or I didn't feel like were good leaders or did a good job as an administrator, I pretty much always knew that while they might have been misguided, they were at least trying to do the right thing for students, right?
Right.
They thought they were, at least they got into this for the right reasons. And I feel like we lose sight of that sometimes. It sort of becomes real personal to people that they are understood or get their way or and competitive. And I think that that competition is both invented because there is no reason for it, and also is what gets in the way of a lot of us working together.
You're absolutely right. And I try and be mindful of that myself. Like, hey, is me pushing for this? Is this the right thing right now? Am I getting in the way of others? Is it really best for the whole? Or is it just me being selfish? Like when I wanted 3D printers for my classroom, you know, is that really necessary? And I decided, you know what? Yeah. And when I got them, I absolutely knew that was the right decision. Nothing started a conversation like those 3D printers. My low floor students all of a sudden were very engaged. Every day they would come in, hey, what are you printing? Can we print this? Can we print that? And so that gave me a lot of student investment in the classroom just by having that technology.
Yeah, it's but it comes back to, I mean, I guess you could make the argument that funds is one place where competition might exist naturally, right? Like there are a fixed amount of funds, and if everybody wants something, then we have to compete for it. But like you said, if we have that awareness of, is this the appropriate use of funds, that's not competition. It's just balance and prioritizing. But I think, you know, there is so often we get a us versus them with administrators, right? And then administrators with their area super people, area superintendents, and superintendents right. with their boards, and boards with their states, and states with the federal. Everybody seems like they're competing and fighting against everyone else. And if we're all here to benefit students, and even once you get into politics, hopefully at least they're there to benefit, you know, people, you know, like benefit their constituents, those students would be part of that group. Like I think if we could just all picture that, we could really start to truly work together and make real change.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think there are a lot of differences, as you pointed out, on all of those different areas that you labeled, and it's really too bad that they work against each other rather than working with and for each other, because so much more would get done because our efforts are kind of muted a little bit, if you will. They cancel each other out, so we're working, you know, for nothing in a sense sometimes, even though many sides are investing energy and we really don't push forward. There almost needs to be like a collective kind of book study. Like we need to read some Dave Burgess books together across all levels. Seriously, we need something like that. I know people where I'm at, you know, for different reasons, aren't attending the same conferences I'm attending. So they're not being fed the same way I'm being fed. They're not being set on fire. They're not getting the content that I'm getting. They're not hearing the research that I'm hearing. And it's too bad. And then when I come back and share, not everybody's really receptive. And so that's kind of hard. Sometimes you can be an island where you're at. Not saying that I am, but at different times I'll feel that way for a little bit. And I think people feel threatened when people share out sometimes, especially if something is new or goes against what they're already doing, like worksheets, for example. I'm kind of anti-worksheet, so some people are all about their worksheets still.
What do we do, right? Like we see these problems. We recognize that there's disconnects, there's competition, there's a lack of working together. Like you said, you're getting fed, you're finding, you're learning, you know, and you mentioned earlier Twitter too. Like that's where these things, a lot of these things are happening. Because I can understand districts don't have the money to send everyone to ISTE. It's not a cheap trip by any stretch.
Right.
And I get that. So what do we do? Because I can't even convince other educators to go on Twitter for the most part, let alone truly feel it and understand why that's important in the kind of, I mean, for me, Twitter completely transformed my practice and my passion for education. So how do we get them there?
Yeah, I think we get them there by continuing to share and just getting a real sense of what the temperature in the room is with the educators and admin and district leaders and board members around us. And don't shy away from those conversations. Don't be, you know, overzealous or too boisterous and come off as pompous, but genuinely share from a place of caring and maybe even be willing to help them out if necessary, like not necessarily go against what you believe in your morals or something that's going to harm the classroom, but maybe they have some side little pet project. And once people see that you care, they're much more open to hearing what you have to say. And it's not that you do it to get something. You do it just out of the kindness of your heart. And now that I'm in the profession, teachers are the most giving people. I truly get it. I'm just blown away by the community we have. And I think you just keep sharing what you're seeing on Twitter and you show people how you're growing. Like, hey, here's how you do this thing. Here's how I've grown. This is how it's affecting my classroom practice. And I think after many, many times of knocking at that door, eventually people are going to want to come check out what you have.
Yeah. You know, it's the leap of faith. You got to take that leap, I guess. That's the stressful part, right? Is recognizing the problems and then going against them, right? Going completely against, you know, listen, and it's like the conversation has to be, I know you're feeling this competition or this drive or this disconnect or this conflict, but it's not there. Let's stop acting like it is, and then it'll really stop being there. And let's like look what I'm doing. Let me see what you're doing. Let's share. Let's just openly communicate between us.
Right. Hmm. And that sharing piece, oh, that's huge. Being willing to take something somebody else is doing, that's huge. Like this next year, I'm going to be working on a giant cross-curricular project with our social science department. And you know, they were really open to it. I found the resources. It's connected to both their standards and my English standards. And so it works out well for both of us and the timing's right. And I've already shifted my own curriculum, like my pacing guide, to line up with the social science curriculum. So when we're going over World War One, boom, they're going over World War One. When we're going over the Holocaust, they're going over the Holocaust. And then when we're going over genocide now, they'll be going over genocide at the same time. And we're going to look to see if we can kind of link up a couple of the assignments with our sophomores. You know, it's probably going to fail in some regards, but hey, we're trying. And the hope is we're going to learn from those failures and come back and make it better and better and better. That's another thing. If you're going to bring about change, you can't think about all the ways you can fail, because then you'll definitely fail for sure. And you'll fail in a negative sense, not a fail where you take that experience and you learn from it, but the type of failure where you sit down and you stop doing, or you go in a different direction. Like we can't have that visceral reaction. And when we start feeling like that, that's when we need to reach out and get some help, get some support, you know, kind of just vent a little bit. And Twitter's great for that. Voxer's another good one too, if people like to use that kind of social media. And any of the other ones. I know some people love Facebook or Instagram. For me, I just prefer Twitter, so I pretty much stick to that one.
Yeah. I think my favorite part of all of that is it's probably going to fail because that's the mindset, right? Like that's the embodiment of the mindset we need to see, because I think other people sitting in a meeting planning this out, they don't say that's probably going to fail and then laugh. They go, that's going to fail. Here's the 15 reasons why we're not doing that. And that's right. The part we have to skip over, right? That their failure is okay. And we have to show that. We have to demonstrate that. We need our students to see it, that it failed. And then, most importantly, in my opinion, when it fails, admit to your students that it failed. Like, well, that didn't work so well. What do you guys think? Like, and that's the part that I think so few teachers do, right? And I think to yes. go back to your point, it's because we aren't working together and we don't feel like the people above us would be supportive of that admission in our classroom. You can't admit you failed to your students. That's, oh, no, no, no. What if an administrator saw that and it went in your evaluation and blah, 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 blah. Right? Those fears just stop us from working together and taking risks.
Right. And, you know, some districts, not my own, I'm really blessed where I'm at. But I've heard stories, and I've seen it when I student taught. I went to a lot of different districts and did a bunch of walkthroughs. Like, wow, it's pretty intense. You feel like Big Brother's watching everything you're doing, and you can't mess up. And so that's where you just teach the curriculum they give you. And while there are some strengths to that, you can't really modify it for the different students you have from like class to class, year to year, so easily. And you got to keep things fresh. Every batch of kids is different. Every year is different. So you kind of need some flexibility, and that's where technology is so great. You can really create engaging assignments that are low floor, high ceiling. And those are the types of students I have. I have students that are reading and comprehending at very low levels, and some that honestly shouldn't be in my class, but they just don't want to do the work of the AP courses. And so they're in my class.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's sad, right? Like it's you don't want that.
No. I always want what's best for my students. And I tell them up front, hey, I want you to leave here being a better version of yourself. If you're not doing that, then I'm not doing my job. And if I'm failing in some area, you know, let me know, not necessarily publicly. I have to be clear on that. Like, but let's have a private conversation about this, and, you know, I'll listen. And so we have different evaluation periods in my course and check-ins. And every time after we do like a large lesson or a large unit, I'll ask my students, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? And I'll ask for specifics. So they can't just say, oh, I didn't like that, or this assignment sucked. No, tell me where this assignment failed. And then they have to give me two ideas on how to make it better. And so I found that really helpful. Even if they're saying,
you're modeling constructive feedback, right? Like, you're modeling, it's not good enough to, it's the same thing as that meeting situation. It's not good enough to sit there and say, this is going to fail, and here's why. This is going to fail. Here's why. Here's what we could do to not make it fail, right? Like, that's the best part. Or this didn't hit what it needed to. It didn't hit home. Here's why. Here's how it could have. It's that third step, right?
Right. And I like that last part you said, you know, here's where it could have. Those are the opportunities I want to go back and reflect on. Like, hey, I was almost there. How can I expedite this? You know, what's the catalyst I'm missing to get this to where it needs to go?
Yeah. Excellent. Man, we wrapped that one up nicely. That was, yeah. I think that went really smoothly. That was good. It's almost like we're professionals. It's weird. We can officially stop calling ourselves hobbyists. We know what we're doing now. We got this. All right. I like it. Let's move on. Let's go to question number two. And the second question for all my guests is, what is something you're doing that you wish all educators would do?
Ooh, definitely use EdTech more. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, so I'm going to add a little bit to that. But at my site, we're one-to-one, and still not everybody is leveraging the technology, or they're really low on the SAMR model. Maybe they're not even on the SAMR model with the technology. And so just welcoming them and helping them out is huge. But I would say, you know, specifically, check out AR, VR stuff. Wow, that stuff, once you get into it, it's not super complicated or hard to use. It's very intimidating looking at it. But when I did that session with Jamie Donnelly, I started using 3D Bear and started doing a bunch of stuff with my kiddos at home. And we all loved it and had a blast. And I could see students really getting into it. And last year I brought in a bunch of merge cubes and we did a bunch of AR VR stuff and they loved it. Talk about student investment. When the kids actually want to come and play with stuff and stay after class, you know you're doing something right. And so find out what those things are. For me, it was AR, VR, and 3D printers and talking a lot about tech. For you, it might be something different.
Yeah, yeah. It is still always a struggle, you know. It's fair, right? There's so many demands on a teacher, right? There's so many things that a teacher is expected to do and on their plate in terms of lesson planning and data analysis and writing units and building assignments and following a scope and sequence, or, you know, there's a million things that they have to do. So for many of them, technology does just seem like that one more thing, right?
It is.
And for some people, it genuinely is, because they just don't have an understanding of the technology of technology in general. And so they have to learn it and figure it out. And for a while, it is that one more thing. But man, is it not just the one more thing that can be so worth it?
And for me, it has been like some real quick practical things. I use Google Doc preferences to really expedite my essay grading. So if I'm using a comment multiple times, I'll put it in as a hotkey and I can type something like hashtag T for topic sentence, and boom, it'll let my students know that they need to focus on their topic sentence. It'll let them know what a topic sentence is, and it'll embed it as a, not quite as a comment. I have to do it a little differently. If I want it in the comments, that's not quite possible, but it'll show up right on their paper. Or another thing I do to get out regular grades, I'll have a bunch of quizzes, like vocab quizzes, some content quizzes for short stories or chapters we're reading. And I'll use my LMS to send those out. I use Schoology, and I'll have it so they have to complete all of these assessments, and it gives them points for that. And some of these quizzes and tests, they can take as many times as they want, because I'm going for mastery. I want to make sure they have that skill set or have that content knowledge before moving on. And I want to provide them many opportunities. And that's not something that takes a lot of work. Once I create the test or quiz, I'm pretty much done. And then I just transfer the grades to our gradebook, which is an outside one, PowerSchool. And it's great. Doesn't take a lot of time. It saved me. Just the essays alone, it used to take me about 18 hours to grade 100 essay or 180 essays. And now I'm down to 4 hours. And this year, I'm going for even less. I'm going to see if I can, you know, do a whole stack in 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's like I always talk about, like, with when I talk to my teachers, it's sort of the time commitment to learn a new tool, like the barrier to entry, right? Like, how complicated is it? How much time is it going to take you to learn? And then what amount of time is it going to save you later, or what is going to be the gain, right? Like, I think we have to, when we teach these tools, there has to be a cost-benefit analysis, right? There has to be, yes, this is time-consuming to learn. It is going to take you time to figure this thing out. But once you have, this is the result, right? Once you've learned it, here's what you get for your time and your effort. Here's the reward, the payoff. And then you have to let those teachers make that decision, because there are so many tools out there. You can't possibly use them all. No one can use them all, you know? And I always am, as the instructional technology coach of my school, and I'm the one that's supposed to know the things, every time I go to ISTE, it's like, 150 people are talking about some tool that, oh yeah, this is, I've been using this and it's amazing and I use it all the time and blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, I've never heard of this thing. I feel like I'm missing something. How did I not hear of, you know, this year it was GimKit. I'd never heard of GimKit,
but
it seemed to be all over the place, right? And so it's always, there's like one little thing that is, man, that's amazing.
GimKit's where it's at. And I've known about it for a while, but at the time I felt like, this is one more tool, right? Like it's similar, but I didn't give it a fair shot. And my buddy Matthew, I talked to him all about it. I said, hey, it's a great tool. You know, can you try it out? Because he's our tech coach for the district. And so he did with the training. And then I got to experience it quite a bit at ISTE. And now I'm all in. I'm I'm ready to go. I'm going to load a bunch of Quizlet sets that I have ready to go, load them in a GIMKit and do that. And with the tips that Jonathan Spike and Michael Matera had, I'm going to do some little twists with it too. So I'm super excited.
Yeah, no, I love it. You know, and you talked a little bit about AR and VR. I've been cold on AR and VR for a while. I've just not seen it yet. I hadn't seen ways in which it was valuable in the classroom. And I think this year at ISTE was the first time that I felt like, okay, I can see this in my room now. I can see this. In fact, it was, you know, John Spike again. I went to one of his sessions on VR and I immediately messaged my admin and said, hey, you want to find me some money so we can buy a class set of Oculus Quest? Cause I want to make this happen. You know, it wasn't until I really started to see it. And I think it's taken longer to develop in the way that most people knew it was going to, but I think we're finally, the apps and the programs are there where students aren't just consuming in AR and VR, specifically right. VR. They're not just consuming now. There's ways for them to create. And that's where I can see, okay, now we have value. Now we're looking at transformation, right? Like now we're in the SAMR model that now we're looking at that redefinition because now we're doing something that you genuinely cannot do without the technology.
Right. And like Flipgrid, I'm just thinking like, wow, they added the AR piece where let's say a student creates something and at back to school night, you have these little QR codes maybe where they sit. It can show a video of the kiddo demonstrating and how they created that piece, how like they're doing something in the class and the parent can see, or at like a, you could do a gallery walk, but it could be with AR. And so students will go around the classroom, scan the QR codes and get explanations from a student literally right in front of them without that student having to be physically there. And it just like blows their mind. And then it's really prepping them with the creation of these items for jobs of the 21st century. It really is. I think that industry is really going to be prominent.
Yeah. I like it. There we go. I like it. I stamp of approval on that one. It's good. Man, good answers, Scott. You're killing it. You're killing it, sir. Killing
Make it easy, Brad.
Hey. All right, we got one more. One more question. You ready for it?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, let's get a little personal. Who is the greatest teacher you've ever had?
Ooh, that I've ever had? Mr. Fisher. So he was my third grade teacher, and I didn't realize what he was doing at the time, but he was doing good teaching. And so he was able to reach the low floor students and the high ceiling students. At that time, I was a high ceiling student. And so he let me create my own spelling list within a certain list of parameters. And then if it didn't fit, you know, his ideal parameters, he kind of offered some suggestions and let me know why specifically those words didn't fit. Like I had proper nouns, like I wanted to have Czechoslovakia because I was going for the longest word I could find in the dictionary. And he's like, no, that's a proper noun. We need some verbs, some adjectives. And he was showing me how to find those and look for the little abbreviations in the dictionary. And so that was great. That's something that really stuck with me. And he made it fun. It was a very involved STEM classroom. And he had some elements of gamification in there. We had Star Trek bucks. And so that was cool. That really incentivized me to continue to do well. And he was just dynamic and engaging, and you know, it was very improper, I guess, but sometimes we would do like physical things in the classroom too, and those were really fun. We would do challenges, we would clear out the desks and do a little PE, if you will, in the classroom safely. It's one of those things like, oh, if an admin walked in, they would see all of the issues, all the red flags, right? But it worked. And I'm not saying go against the grain like that, but, you know, I can't help but share that it stuck with me and it had a very positive effect.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, it's those teachers you remember, right? It's that, you know, they're doing everything right. They're doing all those things at once and hitting, firing on all cylinders, as it was. It's those, and like you said, that he was able to reach all of his students. It wasn't just like a select few. I think it's easy to reach a select few students who have similar interests or an extreme situation. It's easy to reach those. It's a whole nother story to reach all the students in your room to try to get all those kids on their level, that differentiating your relationships as a teacher, right? Like that's hard to do.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's taken me a bit of time and a bit of failing, but as one student wrote in her review this year, she felt I genuinely cared and she could see that. And she hoped that other students saw that too, that I did it not for my own selfish purposes, but because I genuinely care about the students. And this wasn't like, you know, a student I particularly related well with. I mean, we made connections, but our personality types are different. Our interests are different. And they were a low floor student. They really struggled in my class. And to get that letter really just made me smile and kind of affirmed what I was doing. It really empowered me to come back and do even more next year.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. Good stuff. I think that's a pretty place to leave it. We're gonna tie that up. That's the bow on top, and we're gonna wrap this thing up, Scott. That's good, man. First of all, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I really appreciate it. It was an awesome chat. I had a really good time. If you could, for my audience, if they also enjoyed it and want to know more or hear more of your thoughts, where can they find you?
Yeah, please check me out on Twitter at Mr. Noons, rhymes with tunes, teach. And then also my podcast on Twitter is TNT, like dynamite, edtech. And then you can find us on the web at www.tntedtech.com. And on any of the major podcasting apps like Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Nice. Very cool. And I know I will I'll be giving it a listen. I'm only like 40 something hours behind on podcasts right now. But once I catch up to that.
No, I feel you. Road trips are good for those. I just cue them up. And then whenever I'm in the car, boom, just listen.
Yeah, I have my cue ready to go. And I've talked before on the show, but like it's like a weird quirk of mine that I just have to listen to them in order. It drives me crazy. I know there's stuff at the bottom of this list I really want to hear, but I cannot listen to it until I've listened to the stuff before it. Like somehow I'm convinced that podcasts are just episodic stories, like a TV show that I just have to, I could miss something. I could miss something important without it, which they're not in most cases. So I don't know why I'm that way, but I just can't help it. It's a weird quirk. What can I say?
Well, when you do listen, whenever that is, let me know what you think. Give me some feedback, some constructive criticism, because I'm always looking up my game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Scott, again, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for talking with me, and have a great day.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Brad.
Scott, thank you so much for an awesome chat, and I'm really sorry for calling you Nunez at the beginning of the podcast, but it's Scott Nunes. To connect with Scott, you can find him on Twitter, at Mr. Nunes Teach. You can also find the TNT EdTech podcast on Twitter, at TNT EdTech, or at www.tntedtech.com. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter or Instagram at Brad Scheffler. I love to hear from you guys there, and that's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or visit the feedback page on my website that gives you options for feedback as well, which you can find at bradscheffler.com/feedback. Until next week, remember that education isn't a contest between teachers. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com.
The Planning Period Podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.